Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of February 18th, 2020. The South Carolina Democratic primary is rapidly approaching. Recent poll numbers show an ever-tightening race in a state where former Vice President Joe Biden enjoyed double-digit leads over his closest contenders. But with just days to go until February 29th, what's clear is just how unclear everything is. Reporters Jamie Lovegrove and Mayon Schechter are here to provide some perspective. And mark your calendars, Charleston. The Lead will be taping live at Holy City Brewing on March 5th at 6:30 p.m. Come out and show us some low country love, grab some swag, participate in giveaways, recover from your primary hangover,
brown liquor,
and catch up on the latest with the state's top political reporters. Holy City Brewing, March 5th, 6:30 p.m. Show up early, stay late, tip your bartenders. And you can RSVP at scetv.org/SCLEDE. Interact with us on Twitter at SCLeadPod. We always want to hear from you, so holler at us with your thoughts on social media. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, inside the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. Make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including NPR One. You can listen to all four sections of our podcast while you recline in your airplane seat to get just a little bit more comfortable. Or while someone reclines directly into your face and don't have any room to recline, so you start punching the seat in front of you. This is a no-win, guys. Lead does not endorse reclining or violence. Stop it. Just sit like a sardine. Also, if you're listening to this in business class or first class, we apologize for the inconvenience and the noise. Sparkling water, okay? Now for our brief quorum call. Ooh. Again, so sorry it's so loud. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Senate education bill debate continues to go on after senators failed to limit debate last week in a 28-12 vote, according to the Associated Press. That means the debate continues now into the sixth week of the 18-week session, with amendments still being filed on the massive education bill that has $3,300 in yearly scholarships for education majors, $550 annually for teachers to buy supplies, covers fees for certifications for first-time teachers, and provides daily breaks without students and other protections for teachers. Translation, teachers deserve to go to the bathroom. The bill also allows school districts to set their own start dates. Now, the Senate won't be in on Tuesday since the Finance Committee, which is comprised of half of the Senate, will be briefed on the Santee Cooper report. Number two, the Post and Courier reports that last Thursday, at age 72 years and 262 days, Governor Henry McMaster became the state's oldest serving governor, surpassing the mark set by James Burns when he left office in January 1955. McMaster said, "I think as long as people stay healthy and stay involved and exercise and try to eat right, do all the things for good health, I think you're just about unlimited." If McMaster remains governor through the two successive terms allowed under the state constitution, he'll be 4 months shy of his 80th birthday when he leaves office in January 2027. And number three, the Post and Courier reports that the South Carolina Department of Transportation has budgeted to spend $240 million to acquire real estate as part of its decade-long project to rebuild the confluence of roads northwest of Columbia, commonly known as Malfunction Junction. The property is vital to making room for the changes in the $1.6 billion project, which is the largest highway investment in the state's history. The plan, dubbed Carolina Crossroads, includes a huge new interchange where Interstates 26, 20, and 126 come together, plus added lanes to ease merging and rebuilt ramps at several junctions. Construction on the project is expected to begin in 2021. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline: Florida Man complains after dialysis center prevents him from bringing Trump cutout to treatment. And just like the best offense is a good defense, or is it a good defense is the best offense? You know, whatever you want to say. Just wash your hands, people. It's the flu season. It's still raging. Yeah. Also, watch the XFL. Good defense offense. It's interesting, actually. I watched it the other day. Just wash your hands. And we buried the lead. The South Carolina Democratic primary is rapidly approaching. It's just like that big debutante ball. And you know what? We like the attention. But who is going to ask us to dance? Recent poll numbers show an ever-tightening race in a state where former Vice President Joe Biden enjoyed double-digit leads over his closest contenders. Tom Steyer continues his push in the Palmetto State, and other candidates like Bernie Sanders are campaigning nearby North Carolina ahead of Super Tuesday, with just days to go into the February 29th primary. And what's clear is just how unclear everything is, including who Congressman Jim Clyburn might endorse, though we know who Congressman Joe Cunningham doesn't want to see as the Democratic nominee. A lot to talk about here, guys. That's why we have reporters from the Post and Courier, Jamie Lovegrove, and the state newspaper's Mayon Schechter here to provide some on-the-ground perspective. Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning,
guys. Coffee needs a kick in. Before we start, we want to know who you guys side with on that airplane seat recline debate. The woman that reclined or the guy that was punched in the back of the seat? Have you seen the story? And do you have any?
Yeah.
We need to know. And you know what? There's another answer.
My general take is who cares and why do we keep having stupid debates about airplane recliners every couple of months? How many times do we have to do this before? I generally side with the take of we take for granted the fact that we're sitting in a chair in the air.
Sky.
And and that's a pretty cool thing, and everybody else just calm down about the little tiny little luxuries that they expect.
Right. So. But personally, I don't like reclining on planes because I feel bad. I feel so guilty for the people behind me.
Yeah,
but with
too.
That being said, that guy was so in the wrong.
Yes,
he was so in the wrong.
In the wrong.
Yeah. Lose.
That's a grown man punching a woman's chair.
What are you accomplishing? The good thing about in first class, where I typically fly, is you can recline on takeoff.
Right. Yes.
Well, I fly in the cockpit, so I don't know.
I mean, private jet all the way here.
Anyway.
If you weren't supposed to recline, they wouldn't have the recline button. Okay, anyway, continue. All right, go.
Just get everyone warmed up. I want to lead off with Clyburn. We talked about it last week, and then everyone really started getting in gear about this whole the Clyburn endorsement, what's going to happen. He was on several shows this weekend, including CNN's State of the Union, where Dana Bash asked him about South Carolina being Biden's firewall. And he said, I don't know. We'll see if South Carolina is Biden's firewall. We don't know. We'll find out. So not the most exciting thing to hear from someone like Clyburn. When Biden, who was polling on average around 13 points ahead of Bernie Sanders, is now down to 6.5 points. Jamie, I know you were on CNN a couple days ago, and they asked you, who do you think is going to win South Carolina here? And you said, well, that's not my job to do that. But
I specifically said that I got out of the prediction business after 2016, which I will stand by
as long as I live.
Yeah, they should have. It's surprising how many people did not get out of the prediction business. But
so that being said, Jamie, I mean, what is the state on the ground here in South Carolina for Joe Biden? It's a tight race. But is it still Joe Biden's race?
As I said on CNN, he is still the favorite. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was sent a link to an aggregate of odds makers, betting folks on the primary. And actually, in the day after New Hampshire, Bernie briefly became the odds-on favorite. Mm. But Joe Biden has retaken his lead narrowly there. It's getting a lot closer. There's no doubt about it. As I think Jim Clyburn said on CNN, that's what happens in elections. They tend to tighten up the closer you get to them. That is a general trend with all elections. So, it's going to be competitive. You certainly have Tom Steyer doing a whole lot of work and spending a whole lot of money here. Yeah. And that is definitely working. Bernie's team is all over the place. They are knocking on an insane amount of doors and doing a ton of work all over the state. And you still got some folks competing behind them. Of course, Elizabeth Warren is really desperately looking for a win somewhere, or at least to have a better performance somewhere than she has in these first couple states. And Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar certainly have some momentum from New Hampshire. While neither of them have had much of a presence here before, I do think that you will naturally see at least some bump for them, even if it's a limited one.
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
But that lead is shrinking, even without Sanders really having to be in the state, which I think is kind of fascinating. We saw Bernie here last time was MLK Day weekend, King Day at the Dome. This past Friday, he had rallies in North Carolina, including in Charlotte, where I was, with about 2,100 of his closest friends. He instead sent some surrogates to Greenville in the upstate, Susan Sarandon and Danny Glover. And that's what these candidates have to do right now, Mayan, is juggle, these two other early voting states, Nevada and South Carolina, and then, all the Super Tuesday states and be in all these places at once and build out this national campaign. Do we know it's where people, like, you know, on the ground here in South Carolina, do they want to see more of these other candidates besides just Tom Steyer? We see keep coming through, and it's, you know, Bernie's not really here, and, you know, people are talking about Amy Klobuchar wanting to come see her too. Like, what's the mood here when we're talking about trying to get some attention here in South Carolina?
Yeah, I think it makes a difference to a voter that is still sort of undecided, that is choosing between one candidate or another candidate. They do want to see the candidates in their area. And I mean, a perfect example is when Tom Steyer came to Winnsboro. We were all there last Sunday, and I was chatting with a guy from Winnsboro there who was telling me that he's undecided between Joe Biden and Tom Steyer. But then he finished his interview saying, but Tom Steyer came to Winnsboro and Biden hasn't. I believe Biden's sister has come to Winnsboro and done some surrogate campaigning for him. But Joe Biden hasn't been. And that has a big impact on these voters that are still sort of like weighing their options, right? And they're seeing all these ads of Tom Steyer on their TVs or on their phones. They know that he's got a huge staff because they're out everywhere. So I think that does make a difference for a voter that is still kind of trapped between one or the other and figuring out who to vote for when the candidate isn't even in the state physically to campaign. I don't think that surrogates really matter at this stage all that much to a voter that's making a split decision on who they're going to vote for. So I definitely think that post-Nevada, if you are in that top 3-4 range and you really want to make a difference here, I mean, you have to be here a lot in order to help sway some voters' minds.
Oh, and it's interesting, too, because we're seeing, you know, while we're talking about building out these other Super Tuesday states, Biden is actually redeploying staffers to places like Nevada and South Carolina, which is, I mean, what kind of signal does that send, Jimmy? That, I mean, how much does he really have to not only just win South Carolina, but win it by a margin, and we don't know what that margin is, but it has to be something substantial, essentially.
Yeah, he does need to send a message to the rest of the country that what he has been saying is correct, which is that he is the candidate who has the diverse coalition, the support from African-American voters who make up the base of the Democratic Party. He's been making that as his case for why he should still be the nominee, despite coming fourth in Iowa and fifth in New Hampshire. You know, if you can't then come down here and prove that that is the case, then that's going to significantly weaken your argument. And to prove that that's the case, I think, yeah, you do not only need to win, but you need to win by at least some kind of substantial margin.
Double digits? I mean, we talked about this last week. I mean,
double digits would certainly send a big message. That's a great headline, right? Win by double digits.
And that's, you know, where his lead has been so far until recently.
Yeah. There is also a question that I think should be mentioned, and not to diminish the importance of the South Carolina primary, but because the fact that it is so close to Super Tuesday, that can work in one of two ways. The one way is you could say, oh, it's so close, it's going to give him the perfect last, or it's going to give anyone who wins it the big last-minute push right when they need it. The headline going into Super Tuesday is going to be that this person just won South Carolina. The opposite side is California has been early voting for weeks. Right?
North Carolina started too.
North Carolina started. Those voters have no idea what's going to happen in South Carolina other than what they've already been reading. So there's only so
the
much impact that
Carolina,
it can have at this point. And in the past, there has been a longer period of time between South Carolina and Super Tuesday, you know, a longer time for that narrative to sink in, for people to really wrap their heads around it. Sort of the way it's happening with New Hampshire right now, with 11 days between New Hampshire and Nevada. Without that long period of a time, you know, you may not get quite as much of a boost as you would like. And more importantly, you do not have time to raise a ton of money and then deploy it to those Super Tuesday states. You only have 3 days. So if you win South, of course, when you win a primary, Amy Klobuchar saying this in New Hampshire, where she came third, but she raised $12 million afterwards, she's announced. You know, you can raise that money and then you can spend it and you can send all your staffers to all these states and they can work up. But if you only have 3 days, you just don't have enough time to do that, especially in 14 states and territories. So, you know, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, really looking to roll.
And I'm kind of interested, though, on what Klobuchar's impact is. I mean, she was able to raise a lot of money off of the wins, and I think that's great. But then she's also not been in South Carolina. She doesn't have a huge staff here. She hasn't been on the airwaves here. So, yeah, she's now what? She's coming out with her first ad here in South Carolina. She's sending staffers here. But what's the impact of that at this point is my is my big question.
I mean, I don't think Amy Klobuchar is expecting to win South Carolina.
No, but I mean, sure.
Can, yeah,
but
if she can use that momentum boost to get into the top four, even that would probably be a
I guess my question being is that a sign so that when you go into Super Tuesday, you're showing that you have like this bigger force in this state and that can help you in some other states?
I mean, Amy Klobuchar obviously does not have some of the natural appeal to a to the African-American voters that some of these other candidates mm-hmm. do. And, of course, Buttigieg has struggled with the same thing. Buttigieg, unlike Klobuchar, has tried and failed.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least he has not been able to succeed as much as he would like. But, yeah, I think for Klobuchar, you have to also keep in mind that she had far fewer resources than almost all these other candidates. And I think she was banking much more than some of these other candidates on a strong Iowa finish and a strong New Hampshire finish. She kind of had to bank it all there. Now, yeah, is it going to be too late to make any kind of impact here and in Super Tuesday states? Probably. But,
you
got to do what you can, and you can't really rewind the past. And if she had spent more time here, maybe she would not have come third in New Hampshire, and then her campaign would be over anyway. So,
speaking of prioritizing, Jamie, Sarah Elizabeth Warren just ended TV ads in South Carolina. She's no longer has ads on TV here. She's moving that advertising to Maine, Super Tuesday state.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're just talking about. This was from an AP story. The headline was 2020 hopefuls eye Super Tuesday as two other states loom. Kind of what we were just talking about.
Right.
For just a little speed bump here on the way to Super Tuesday. But Warren was briefly in town in the state. She was
very
in Charleston. you were down there. Only a handful of reporters were made aware of the situation. What was going on down there, and what was the scene like in Charleston with her?
Yeah, so she did a couple of very small things during a tight window in Charleston. She stopped in for lunch at Bertha's Kitchen. She got lunch with Benny Starr, who is a rapper and progressive activist from Pineville, who's been a surrogate for her, you know, just greeting diners very briefly, didn't say anything, didn't gaggle, didn't do anything. And then she did a closed press roundtable with some black male activists down in the Lowcountry and talked to them. And I think she made it on some TV stuff as well while she was down there.
Yeah.
you know, she is in a difficult position right now. You know, I wrote a story about this after that stop, in that she, unlike Biden, doesn't have a firewall, right? She's New Hampshire was supposed to be the state where she was going to do well. It's a neighboring state to Massachusetts, her home, and is viewed as more progressive. And of course, she's one of the more progressive candidates in the field. So the fact that she's come out of there with a very disappointing fourth place finish, you know, certainly it should be said she has technically more delegates than Joe Biden at this point, and she did better in Iowa and better in New Hampshire than him. But the difference between them and the reason why the Biden camp is probably more hopeful today than the Warren camp is because they know South Carolina is coming, they know Super Tuesday is coming, and they're feeling good about some of the states on Super Tuesday. The Warren camp is looking at the map right now, and Warren supporters that I was talking to while she was at Bertha's Kitchen and while she was around South Carolina are looking at the map and saying, where are we going to win at this point? So, look, they're hoping for a third-place finish in South Carolina. That is the goal. That's what they would consider to be an expectation-defying performance, and that's going to be tough because we've been talking about Joe Biden, Tom Steyer, and Bernie Sanders as really having created some distance right now between the three of them and the rest of the pack. Not only does she have to catch up to them, but she has to ward off Pete Buttigieg. She has to ward off Amy Klobuchar as they're making gains. So, you know, that is the goal. Some of her surrogates have been pretty explicit. Third place, that would be a huge finish for her. But even that, even third, is going to be tough. And again, after you come in third in South Carolina, where are you going to win? You got to start winning somewhere, and where is that going to be?
And that's what we kind of keep talking about all these other candidates, Mayani, when we look at the Klobuchars and the Buttigieges. You know, it's like, okay, where's the jump? And one of them that we do see who's really trying to get that win in South Carolina, or at least do some damage in South Carolina, get a good finishing, is Tom Steyer.
Yeah.
And I want to kind of keep with Congressman Clyburn as our narrator for this podcast, because he was on CBS Face the Nation, where he said, I think that we're going to have a real spirited contest. He added that businessman Tom Steyer was doing an incredible job. Money makes a difference. Steyer has it. He's been spending it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things he did spend it on is now he's retained another senior national advisor, Orangeburg Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter, who's the longest serving member of the South Carolina House, current president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. This is a big get for him for that campaign and just adds a little bit more weight to what he's really trying to do in South Carolina, it seems like.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a huge boost for him. I mean, she's a strong surrogate. I mean, she can really go on national television, radio, whatever, and talk about this ground game that Tom Steyer and his wife really have been able to work on here in South Carolina. The Tom Steyer presidential campaign is so interesting in that, you know, this is the state that he is doing well in. I mean, well is obviously a relative term. He's in third in most polls that we've seen. And we'll see, I think, a new Winthrop poll this coming week. But this is the only state where he has made any kind of inroads. He didn't place high in any of the other early voting states.
He seems to be doing okay in Nevada as well. We'll
sure,
see what happens on Father's Day, but that's the other one he's pointing to.
Sure,
and he spent a lot of time there. He went on a bus tour there.
No, I mean, that's totally fair. But I mean, he's not registering on any national poll.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's for sure.
It's so South Carolina, in my opinion, like covering that campaign has been so interesting because he is definitely disrupted for Bernie Sanders and for Joe Biden. He has completely disrupted their campaigns here. He's been able to poll voters that otherwise would have probably gone to Bernie Sanders or in some cases Joe Biden. Yeah. He's obviously been able to blanket the state with almost 100 at this point staffers. He's got tons of volunteers. He's got, you know, ads everywhere. I was just actually one of his canvassers came to my colleague's apartment the other day and dropped off some materials and asked if he was voting for Tom Steyer. I mean, they are physically out there. And so it's been really kind of interesting to sort of watch how he's been able to impact Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, these two candidates who arguably had a much sort of stronger, more organized ground game maybe at the beginning, who obviously have high recognition in this state and who were expected in their own kind of capacity to do well. I think Tom Steyer has definitely had a major impact on how this race has sort of shifted here in South Carolina. And I'm interested to see if he does come in third, where he is at right now in the polls, how that does kind of impact some Super Tuesday states.
But then he becomes the Bloomberg, right?
Well, that's
then Bloomberg.
The problem.
Well,
like,
then,
like,
yeah.
He's the warm-up act for Bloomberg.
Right, no, sure.
You know, I've said that I don't understand, you know, okay, I do understand, obviously, what their thinking is. Their thinking is he gets a strong form in South Carolina. They really, realistically, if they really want to boost, they're going to have to win South Carolina. So they win South Carolina, pull off shocking upset. Oh, my goodness, Tom Steyer. And that creates this huge boost, sent him into Super Tuesday, sent him beyond, and suddenly he's a national force. The problem is, A, you have to win South Carolina, which is hard. And so you don't win. You know, that's a good boost, but not a huge one. And then B, Mike Bloomberg, who is 40 times wealthier than Tom Steyer.
$400 million in spending so far.
And is just he has done what Tom Steyer has done in South Carolina, Mike Bloomberg has done nationwide. Yeah. That is unbelievable because, you know, South Carolina
staffs
voters are listening
Super
to this.
Tuesday
and this
like
is where
huge.
I think the surrogates become even more important, I think, because, you know, you look at the fact that Steyer has been able to bring in all of these black lawmakers from South Carolina. You got Bloomberg, who's got one of the bigger surrogates in the state is Mayor Steve Benjamin.
Absolutely.
And I think that, to me, post-South Carolina, particularly with Michael Bloomberg and Tom Steyer, that's when the surrogate game becomes even more important, at least for them, because they need those lawmakers, they need those politicians to speak on their behalf, given the fact that Michael Bloomberg has had kind of a controversial past, and that's going to be a problem.
Benjamin's already had to be defending that on radio interviews.
That's going to be a continued problem, and I think most candidates are going to talk about that on the campaign trail, especially as
they already are.
Right, yeah. Sure.
But is Steyer's role almost helping create a wounded Joe Biden where there is no clarity coming to South Carolina and everyone's muddled and then it's like, oh, well I tried in South Carolina, but now good luck, Joe, on Super Tuesday.
And again, as you say, in that sense, he is sort of the Bloomberg of this state. Yeah. He is doing what Bloomberg is doing to Biden in all the other states. He is showing that actually if you can reach the same level of name recognition as Joe Biden, if you can run good ads,
get the black vote.
That's what I'm saying.
It's huge
you can
polls,
win over the black vote. That's what I'm going to. So it creates a lot more difficulty. And of course, standing over there enjoying this all is Bernie Sanders, who has really not dropped 1% since Steyer's rise. So I think almost all of Steyer's vote is coming from black Biden supporters or, you know, maybe Warren supporters. Bernie has stood absolutely, you know, at the same level that he always was, has not dropped 1%. If anything, he's gained since Steyer's rise. So Bernie is sitting pretty watching Biden fall and knowing that he may not even need to gain more votes in South Carolina. He can stay exactly where he is And because the leader is falling, he may end up catching up to him.
Even more reason why he doesn't need to come here.
And that's the same case nationwide. Yeah. And I think it's going to create a lot of discussion among sort of the Democratic establishment, the donors, the party officials, about if they are really worried about Bernie Sanders, and we'll get to someone in a second who is very worried about Bernie Sanders, does that mean that they
stop
need to
combine? Stop looking at my notes, Jamie. Stop looking at my notes.
Do folks need to drop out?
Yeah.
Because look, if you're gonna have Buttigieg and Biden and Steyer and Bloomberg and Klobuchar all dividing up this vote, are you just creating the opportunity for a 25% support for Bernie Sanders to become the nominee? That's what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jamie, just to wrap up, you just touched on it real quick.
Yeah.
You had that story about South Carolina's other Democratic Congressman, Joe Cunningham, not saying that he's going to endorse anyone, but saying who he doesn't want to see as the nominee.
Right.
Can you elaborate on what he was talking about there?
Yeah, so I've been, you know, reaching out to the Cunningham camp for months now, saying, when is he going to weigh in? And actually, if you listened to this podcast last week, more than a few hours after it came out, you would have heard me saying, like, hey, you know, don't rule out the possibility Joe Cunningham's going to weigh in. Literally that same afternoon, they decided to send a statement to me, which really dropped a nuclear hammer on Bernie, was very explicit. I thought maybe they would vaguely allude to some concerns. He named Bernie Sanders. He said that South Carolinians don't want socialism. Mm-hmm. And when I asked if he would support Bernie if he becomes the nominee, he wouldn't even entertain that question. He said Bernie Sanders will not be the nominee. Now, look, you know, there, as someone pointed out on Twitter, there's some interesting parallels between the way that Republican congressmen were approaching Trump in 2016 when he was emerging as the front runner. Mm. They were creating early distance. So they were doing two things. They're trying to hurt his chances of becoming the nominee, and they're also creating some distance so that if he does become the nominee, they don't get automatically attached to him because they're very worried about the impact that he is going to have on them as moderate Democrats down ballot. This is happening nationwide. You know, congressmen in frontline Democratic districts that flipped from red to blue in 2018 are all panicking about the possibility that Bernie is going to be a nominee and the fact that it's going to endanger their chances of winning re-election. So they're worried and they're trying to create that distance. Of course, you know, the Republicans, the South Carolina GOP, the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, they are not going to let them create that distance. If Bernie is the nominee, you are going to see 1,000 ads in the Lowcountry about how Joe Cunningham is a member of the Socialist Party with Bernie Sanders. And
it won't matter what Joe says.
It does not matter what Joe, you know, obviously
we'll
report it
over all the
right
other
but you know the TV is going to drown everything out. And so they're worried about it, and so for him to get involved for the first time and to say that was revealing. What I will also just add quickly is that the fact that he chose not to endorse anyone and said he does not plan to endorse anyone reveals another issue, which is that, and there's been a lot of reporting this sec too, moderates can't figure out who they want, right? And this is the problem. They all know they don't want Bernie Sanders, but they see weaknesses in every single other candidate. They're worried about the idea of a 38-year-old nominee, and they're also worried about the idea of a 78-year-old nominee, right? They're worried about a nominee like Amy Klobuchar, who doesn't have that much, you know, national recognition and may have some questions to entertain too. They're worried about Elizabeth Warren. You know, I think some voters still see some similarities in the character and the profile between her and Hillary Clinton. And I was talking to a voter last night at Brooklyn Baptist Church who said, and this is a quote, and don't shoot the messenger, but this is a quote. She said, Elizabeth Warren reminds me of my librarian, and I don't think my librarian is presidential. People view it that way.
Yeah.
You know what? They may be wrong, but there are still voters who view it that way. So the point is, nobody can figure out who to get behind. Every moderate candidate has at least one glaring weakness. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, folks are rallying against Bernie, but they're not rallying behind anyone. Mm-hmm. And they are creating this opportunity for Bernie to emerge as the nominee.
And maybe we'll see some clarity in Nevada. Maybe we'll provide some clarity, but hard to say at this point.
We got to write some stories coming up, so I hope there's some clarity
at some
point.
Not to mention that Nevada may...
Hold on.
It would be good because South Carolina would
we're
be even more important.
There we go. Oh, they can hear us. We're still rolling.
just kidding, Nevada. We hope it goes great.
And on that note... A little positive note there. I want to thank Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier and my Schechter with the State Newspaper for joining me. Stick with us. There's plenty more to come. We promise. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020-related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Now, we expect a Winthrop poll earlier this week, but East Carolina University just released a poll following the New Hampshire primary that found Joe Biden now leads with 28%, followed by Senator Bernie Sanders at 20%, businessman Tom Steyer at 14%, Pete Buttigieg at 8%, Amy Klobuchar at 7%, Elizabeth Warren at 7%, and Michael Bloomberg, who is not on the ballot in South Carolina, at 6%. Now, this poll was conducted between February 12th and 13th, and the sample consisted of 703 likely Democratic voters in South Carolina, with a credibility interval similar to the poll's margin of error of plus or minus 4.3 points. The Hill reports that the Democratic National Committee released qualifications for the February 25th debate in Charleston. Candidates need to reach 10% in four polls approved by the DNC or 12% in South Carolina-specific polls. The polls must have been released between February 4th and February 24th. Candidates can also qualify by winning at least one delegate from Iowa, New Hampshire, or Nevada. Biden, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Sanders, and Warren have all already qualified. Bloomberg is one poll away, and Steyer still has yet to qualify. State Rep. Nancy Mace is fundraising off of the shout-out she received from Vice President Mike Pence during his speech to the Citadel Corps cadets last week. Mace was the first female graduate of the military institution and is one of five Republicans running to be the nominee to challenge Congressman Joe Cunningham in the 1st Congressional District. And this is coincidentally a bit of a preview of how the Trump administration plans to flip House seats, according to Axios, with Pence doing more of the retail politicking in the districts Trump won in 2016 but lost in the midterms. The National Republican Campaign Committee has made Cunningham's seat and three others a focus. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some state trivia? He is. Russ, hello.
Hello. Thanks.
How's it going?
Good. Good.
What do you got for us, Russ?
Well, you remember last time we talked about what an infamous month February in 1865 was in the history of the state. Where that was the month that Union forces moved through South Carolina during the Civil War. And of course, most people, when you talk about that, you talk about the burning of the city of Columbia, the capital city. The rule of thumb for many, many, many years, of course, has been that Sherman's Union forces burned Columbia. But in the past 155 years, there's been a lot of scholarly research, and some opinions have changed as to actually who was responsible for the burning of the city of Columbia. So, do you know who the consensus now seems to think is responsible for burning one-third of the city?
You're going to give me the questions? Do you want me to tell you right now? Because I have an idea who it is, but I don't want to say it too soon.
Well, go ahead and take it. No.
I mean, you're talking about burning the city of Columbia. I mean, I do that. That's a casual weekend.
yes, I'm sure. So, our choices are A, Union troops occupying the city of Columbia; B, Confederate troops setting fire to bales of cotton to deny the Union the bulk of that cotton. There was a lot stored in Columbia at the time. C, Union prisoners that were freed from a Confederate prison along the Congaree River when the troops entered Columbia. D, all of the above.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go all the above because I think it was just a big mishmash. But yeah, there was drunken revelry, I think, that led into the whole burning, led to the burning. That's my understanding. Obviously, they fired upon the state house and stuff like that, but like they kind of, there was a lot going on. So I'm going to say D, Russ.
Well, all of the above is really a good answer for this question because it appears that really all of those things contributed to the burning of the city. Now, bear in mind, it was an incredibly windy day, and there was probably fire set.
Yeah.
Scholars think now by all of those, there was a lot of alcohol suddenly made available to these groups coming into the city. Also remember, as Sherman's troops went through, slaves were freed. So you had freed slaves, you had prisoners just now getting out of jail.
Yeah.
Confederate forces leaving and not real happy about it. Union forces coming to ransack the capital of the state that started the whole thing. As one historian described it, Columbia that night was a drunken mob. So it appears that in a way, it was, as far as the fire goes, it was a perfect, maybe a perfect firestorm that hit the city. One third of the city destroyed.
Jeez.
By fire.
Gosh.
Now, Columbia wasn't the only city to suffer from fire. There was Aiken, Bamberg, Barnwell, Orangeburg, Camden, Sherrill, but not like Columbia. The iconic picture, I would encourage you to look for it, it's online or in history books, was the picture taken from the top of the State House steps looking north up Main Street and to see the destruction of downtown Columbia. It's it's really something to see if you've never looked at that picture.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Russ. Thanks for that little history right there.
Sure.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Friday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 11:30 a.m. All about this podcast and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram at @scleadpod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @scledepod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scledepod@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier and the State Newspaper. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch and Tom Posey are our executive producers. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on February 17th, 2020. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Oh, you've never been on a Jumbotron before? It shows.
And you can find us at .biz.